Hi, this is Gary with another Basecamp Campfire Conversation. And today we have a conversation around the fire with Dave Munson. And Dave, as you can see on the front of the Basecamp page, is the founder and president of Saddleback Leather. And a lot of you guys have seen some of their products. I have a bag that I actually won at a Free Agent Academy event, which I was absolutely shocked. I was talking to another guy, and they were pulling out names out of a hat for people to win a couple products, and I've never won anything in my life. So I got engaged in a conversation just to avoid the embarrassment of not winning. And as we're talking, all of a sudden I noticed the room got really quiet. And so I looked for a second to see what was going on, and everybody was looking at me. And I kind of looked at him, and all of a sudden I heard Kevin Miller say, "Gary, did you not hear us just call your name? You won this bag." I was shocked to have won this briefcase. And many of you have seen it at the Basecamp gathering, and it's just a beautiful piece. And one of our other guys, Jerry Goddard, owns the same bag and the cover for his iPad. So you know how beautiful these products are. So we have Dave on the phone with us, and much, much more spectacular than the bags, as glorious as those are, is Dave's life. And so I would love for us to get into Dave's story. And let me say one more thing, Dave, as I'll let you say something here. And that is this. When I first met Dave at the Free Agent Academy, one of their meetings, their intensives, what I noticed very quickly was that the room had a noticeable love and respect for this man. And you could just feel it. You could just see the room look at Dave. And so I was curious what that was, and it didn't take me long to start to pick up what was coming just from Dave's countenance and his presence. And there is this radical joy, happiness, excitement, adventure about this man's life. And it's out of the nature of his heart. It's out of the nature of his relationship with God. And I soon realized, okay, this is why people have this pull towards Dave in respect and love for him. So, Dave, I'm so glad you've joined us for this call.
Wow. I want to meet me. That's great. That sounds really good. Gary,
well, that's
you're very kind. You're very kind.
I just need to bring a video camera next time and then play it back to you, and then you go, "Oh, there it is."
Well, so, Kevin from Free Agent Academy had been he likes stories where God has been working in people's businesses and success happens there, and so he talks up quite a bit, so. Yeah, that was part of it there. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. That's very cool.
Yeah, thank you. And one of the things I've noticed about you, and this is where I'd love for you to maybe talk about kind of the present, and then let's go back to the past that led to this present, is I've noticed in that time that we had together face-to-face is that I could tell you really love what you do, and that there's a story behind what you do, that what you do, God has led you into, and very much reflects who you are, you know, as you have discovered that over the years. And not only did I notice you love what you do, and the guys will soon hear that in your voice, but also that God keeps expanding the people that get to experience the effect of your life. It just seems to grow and grow and grow. And I can tell you're not a guy that's going to force that to happen. You're not the corporate, you know, building an empire guy. It's just growing, by the work you guys are doing, but it just seems mostly by God's, he just keeps, you know, kicking the walls out farther, you know, spreading out the tent stakes, that kind of thing. So tell us some about what's happening now with you, with Saddleback Leather, and the things that's created. And then let's go back to kind of more the beginning of your story.
God has been, uh, he's been shaping me in certain ways to have certain tastes and certain flavors, certain likes and dislikes, and I've got a gut for certain things, and I go, no, let's not do that, and that's, and he's been surrounding me with people who are really good. I mean, we have, our CEO, Chuck Bowen, he's a super smart guy at organizing, structuring, and taking people and, you know, seeing where they should be, and then we have a general manager, Jimmy Gibson, who's, I mean, he came on over about a year and a half ago. Guy is a genius. And so at marketing and branding and, God just keeps surrounding us with these people. And so and then he keeps on promoting us. Like, we get write-ups in, like, Forbes Life magazine, and we're in Women's Health. Believe it or not, the article was something about, here's what you steal from your man kind of thing. And it had our duffel bag in the back of a trunk, and we just keep getting write-ups for free. People just keep on promoting us. We put out the word, but they gladly accept us. And we were on National Geographic with a guy who was taking our stuff around the world. His name's Piers Gibbons. And maybe you saw it, Eating with Cannibals, a show where he was in Irian Jaya or Papua New Guinea there, talking with cannibals. And he had our messenger bag, and he's next week he's all over there again with the Witch Doctor Will See You Now, and he's got one of our bags. And we just keep getting on TV, and God just keeps bringing customers to us, and people keep talking about us. And I don't know how to stop him, that guy. He just pretty impressive. When he runs his business, what do you do? Just get out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. That is so amazing. And so tell everybody real quickly about this episode of MythBusters where they actually ask you for one of your bags and they wanted to blow it up. And so, I mean, this is amazing. It's not that they just used your bag. They wanted to blow it up. So tell them about that, because that's just amazing.
Yeah, MythBusters did a... Adam on MythBusters, he loves our leather, so he's a Saddleback fan, and so he said, "Hey, can we have a briefcase so we can blow it up? We're doing a deal with the Valkyrie mission to assassinate Hitler, and they want to disprove that it would have killed him if he were in an underground bunker when the 4 pounds of C4 went off in someone's briefcase, and so they put it in our briefcase and." Blew it up a couple times, 2 different ones, and I have some pieces, some charred pieces on my desk that they found, and so anyway, they blew up a couple bags on TV, and then we ended up doing a contest on see if you can destroy your bag, and so we had some scientist from a university in Canada, he dipped his bag in what's that real cold stuff? Terminator, Bad Cop.
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it either.
Someone's going, it says. Yeah. Anyway, he dipped it in that and threw it off the like 3 or 4 stories. And the other guy in Nevada just obliterated it with a bunch of guys with a bunch of heavy arms and then blasted it with some explosives. And anyway, so people are destroying their bags, of course, with permission, for the MythBusters contest that we're running on that. So it's
okay.
I got the coolest job, maybe on the planet. So And we have to travel a lot. My hot wife and I travel all over the place, and with our 2 kids, we have a 2-year-old and 4-year-old, and we do videos of our bags in Africa and Australia and Bora Bora and just different places in Jamaica. We have this big, long, dreadlocked guy describing the briefcases and how to turn one into a backpack. and someone in the way in the back smoking weed. He was way up in the mountains. Anyway, smoke's all rising up. It's kind of funny. Yeah, but anyway, so it's a fun job that God's blessed us with, and because He knows that it's further in His kingdom. That's why we exist, is to love people around the world through, and or God loving people through us. And so it's really been a neat job.
Yeah. Okay, so one more thing about the present, the current, and that is this. You know, your bags are absolutely amazing. I love the one I have, and, you know, people talk about, and you talk about on your website, how you get people get stopped all the time when someone sees one of these bags asking, where'd you get that? And But you know, your bags are expensive. But it seems like from what you've told me and others that maybe the main reason people buy your bags is because of the story that they tell. Say more about that. I mean, you experience customers all the time, but what is the power that seems to go with the bags that you have?
Well, my first bag, I was walking along. I came back from Mexico, and people were stopping. Where'd you get that bag? Hey, you're going to go hunt a rhino? You know, all that sort of thing. Hey, adventurer. Hey, did you steal that from Indiana Jones? You know, and that's what I got from, you know, everywhere I went. And so what happens, it kind of, they're a tough feeling, tough bag, you know. And it's kind of one of those things, you are what you wear, sort of thing. I used to have an old Land Cruiser, and when I drive, and it's kind of raised up a little bit, not too much, but it had some big tires on it and a rack on the top, and it was just a tough-looking rig. And then when I would wear my black kind of biker boots, man, I just wanted to go punch someone. It was like I felt tough and strong and wanted to go on an adventure, and I was just driving around town. I not I would punch anyone. I wouldn't do that. But you know what I mean? It gave me this feeling about me, and so when I would be out with my, so people, when they get the bag, it's like, I want to go on an adventure. I want to travel. I want to, you know, and people on the website, they send in pictures to us of them with their bag in Tibet or in Nepal somewhere, or in Russia or somewhere in Norway, or all over the world, top of Mount Kilimanjaro. And they just send bags in, pictures of them with their bags. And so people get it, and they just have this, I want to go wrestle an alligator, punch a bear in the face, feel. And then, and people look at the bags and go, ooh, that's who I am on the inside, or that bag is who I am. And it's kind of this adventurous, kind of this wild, noble heart type bag. And people go, that's me. And then they ask about it. And then the guy goes, the owner says, why, glad you asked. You know, now they've been had a vote of confidence, and it just keeps spreading. So that's kind of the way the bags work.
Yeah.
And you know, we use real thick leather, and we do it really high quality. Everything we can, as high of quality as we can. And I don't know how anyone can have a better bag. I don't know how. And and nothing breakable on it. And so has this indestructible feel about it, and you're not afraid to scratch it. And the more you scratch it, the better it looks. And it tells a story, because it looks nice and worn and old, you know, in a short time. And if you wanted to, or you could rub it down and keep it, you know, tame. But anyway, it tells a story, or it looks like it has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm so amazed by is, as I was hearing you and a couple of your guys, Chuck, and Chuck was on the phone with us last week doing a campfire conversation. But hearing some others talk about this is just, and again, everyone on base camp knows the power of story, whether it's the power of story outside of you to move your heart, like in a movie or a book, or the power of your story with another man or his story with you. And hear your bags, the power of these, of this product, it appears to be the story that they create or bring with them, and I just think that's just such an amazing thing. Okay, so do me a favor. Let's go back in time now. You start wherever you want and start to tell us your story of kind of how you got to the life you have today, because it's fascinating. I've heard some of it, so I'd love for these guys to hear it.
Okay, so When I was, so I went to Multnomah Bible College in Oregon and got out, youth pastor for a while, wanted to go back to seminary, but they said I couldn't come in. And that was in 99. And I thought, what? I mean, I had a 2.29. Come on. I mean, what the heck? And so, I mean, I had a blast in college. And so I thought, you know, I wanted to go back. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I was 28, and anyway, I finally kind of snuck my way into seminary, and I got accepted. And they said, man, no one's ever asked that before. And I got into a sort of back door. And then while I was waiting for school to start, someone said, hey, Dave, we could really use you to go down to Mexico with a group called Centro Noé school down there. And it's a Christian private school, and they help poor kids, and so teach them English and all that. So, man, I knew right away in my heart, I said, this is it. This is what I want to do. And I thought for sure God wanted me to go to seminary. And so I told the school, no, see you later. Didn't want to go out with you anyway. and went to Mexico, down to a place called Morelia, kind of near Mexico City, and I was teaching English for a year. And while I was there, I had to walk about a half mile or something down to my house from the school. So I looked for a bag to be made, and I had this bag in my head, and I could see it, and I said, man, that's just the coolest bag, Indiana Jones type bag. And so I went looking for a bag like that, and I couldn't find one anywhere. So I said, Lord, help me to find this bag, you know, please. Well, so he showed it to me in a way that I wasn't expecting. And I ran into a guy who was making bags in the market, in the back room there. And I said, hey, can you make me a bag if I draw it out for you? And so he did. And sure enough, I got it. And it was the coolest stinking bag. And in fact, when I drew the design out, I said, Lord, please. Please, I want this to be the coolest bag in the world. And I do that with everything. My dog Lord, I want this to be the coolest dog in the world. So I had a rack made for my Land Cruiser, and I said, God, I want this to be the coolest rack in the world, you know, and, you know, for me. And sure enough, I got this bag back, and people were stopping me on the streets. People were like, excuse me, sir, where can I get that bag? I mean, four or five times a day, people were stopping me, asking me about this bag. So I thought, I bet there's a business here that could support my ministry. And so I went and had some more bags made down in Mexico, and then I had some more bags made, and I ended up moving to Juarez, Mexico. It's right across the border from El Paso, Texas. And I took my old Land Cruiser and I sold it because I couldn't save up any money. So I sold my old Land Cruiser, and it was really popular. And I bought some more Land Cruisers while I was living in Juarez, and I was fixing them up. And took a few years to do that, and I ran out of money and all that. But in the meantime, I was sending money down to those guys to make bags for me, and I moved, and then they would send up the bags on the bus. Up to Juarez from, you know, way down south in Mexico. And I would, you know, I'd deposit money in their bank account there in Juarez, and they'd send them up. I'd go to the bus station, pick up the box, and I'd go over to I had this little apartment in, like, pretty close to the worst part of the whole stinking country. So it was rough. And I lived in a $100 a month apartment for about 3 years with just my dog and I. I had a black lab named Blue. And I slept on the floor in the living room, the room, and someone gave me a mattress. And the mattress was cave sunken in the middle, so I slept on the side, and Blue would sleep in the middle. And I'd roll in toward him and then roll back over to the side again. I didn't have hot water, and in the summer it was fine. I would just step out of the shower because it was so hot. I'd step out of the shower and walk straight to my bed without a towel and just, like, lay down in bed. And that's the way I could go to sleep, was from the evaporation. And it was, and then the wintertime, of course, I just, here's the trick, just so you know, if you don't have hot water, you get your legs wet first, then you get your arms wet, then you get your head wet, and then by then you have enough splashes on your body that is, that when you get jump in and commit fully, it's not that bad. But anyway, that's the trick for bathing in icy cold water when it's freezing.
Okay,
so,
well,
FYI.
That's good to know. It's a survival technique. I like it. Yeah.
Believe me, for 3 years, no hot water, it's the least painful way of taking a cold shower. Just so you know.
Okay, so 3 years you're living like this.
Yeah, and so every penny that I got, I would buy dog food, and I'd pay my cell phone bill, and I would take the bags over to this mechanics friend of mine shop, and he'd let me use his shop at night, and I would sit there in the office and sell my bags on eBay, and I'd sell a bag a week or a couple of bags a week, and it just kept growing and growing. I couldn't keep up with production and with the demand, I mean, and so God just kept on blessing it and blessing it and blessing it, and it came up with a name for this company, and it just kept growing, and finally I was getting ready to move over to the U.S. and I thought, I'm gonna take a trip with my brother. So we went down to Panama and Costa Rica and hung out for a few weeks and surfed and played around, and I was in an internet cafe there in Panama, and I said to my brother, I was looking at watching the auctions end, and two of the bags had sold for $710. That was the highest bidders. I was like,
How long ago?
That was in 2005. And
wow.
I was like, are you kidding me? I could not believe it. It was, and so I was like, thank you, Lord. This is great. And my dad, I got him to send out the bags for me while I was gone. And so he started working for me. And anyway, so I was in the cafe and I checked my MySpace. And that was the pre-Facebook thing. And sure enough, there's this really pretty girl on there. And I thought, she's too pretty. It's like is she one of those, I'm new in town and I lost all of my clothes almost. But anyway, I wanted to go to lunch maybe. I thought, no, that was one of those trashy, junk mail things. But she was, she was conservatively dressed. And so she was really pretty. And I thought, wow. And so I checked, she asked me where Multnomah was. She had read my profile. And I was like, wow. So hey, Jonathan, my brother, hey, check her out. So I checked out her profile, and she was all about, man, I love the Lord. He is number one in my life. And he determines all that I do. And I just thankful for him, to him for everything. And I was like, what? So, eHarmony and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, some girl is chasing me. So stalking me, I joke about her stalking me all the time. And so I get back.
We all see your pictures. You're not the stalking type, you know what I mean? So it must have been something else.
Yeah. Must have been something else. And she's not a stalking type either, so that was kind of weird. And so I contacted her when I got back, told her that we're typing back and forth too much. I'm getting carpal tunnel. And we need to talk on the phone. And so, man, next thing you know, I'm in San Antonio visiting her. And let's just say we hit it off. And about 5 months later, we got married. And I was 35 when we got married. She was 34. And we'd, never been married before. And I'm super picky, and she's super picky. She takes everything really slow, and bam, I just knew it. No question about it. Got married. And that's when God really, really started to grow the business even more. He was waiting for me to get her. And she's been really good with the wisdom that she has. And she said, Dave, I don't know. We need to pray about that some more for different things. And she's got a huge compassionate heart. And she's really funny. She's 11 different women call her their best friend. And she is just the most helpful person, loving, compassionate. Anyway, so I got this great wife, and so we are
we got married and went off to Bora Bora for the honeymoon. Of course, most trips now are business expenses because we do videos and all that sort of thing. We went shark diving with her and then together and got some videos there. They're on the website. Anyway, so we got into debt because I didn't know how to run a business. And I had a great idea, but we were about $150,000 in debt. But I couldn't keep up with shipping stuff.
So how was that happening? I mean, you have demand greater than you can supply it, and yet you're finding yourself in debt.
Isn't that weird? I was just, better it happened. I am so thankful that it happened because there's a Bible verse that I like a lot. It's in 1 Thessalonians, and it says, "Be thankful in all things, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus." And so when it's because, and all these things, I have the opportunity to say, "Lord, why are you letting this happen? Why? And when it's, I believe it's a lot of times it's a test, but usually he's creating a story. Mm-hmm. And I, like the Juarez thing, I didn't gripe and complain. God, why did you? Well, once. I did. A couple of times. But I had a pastor screw me out of about $2,000, and he was fixing up a Land Cruiser, and he got the money and never touched it. And that's how I kind of got stuck there in Juarez. And but you know what? That's part of the fun, cool story is being stuck in Juarez, sleeping on the floor in a $100 a month apartment with no hot water with my dog. And Blue and I just traveled all over the place and got down to $19 in my bank account. And I thought, you know what? I'm just not going to eat. People do it all the time. And I said, I've got a full bag of dog food. I've got gas in my truck. I've got $19 for more gas. I paid my rent, and I didn't have any money on the horizon. Well, I had like two or three weeks out, I had money coming. But so I said, I just won't eat for a couple weeks. And, I wasn't griping about that. I griped about the pastor. All this was God saying, Dave, listen, don't you know that I'm in charge of this? I'm creating the story in you. And honestly, if I hadn't done that business in Juarez, trying to get Land Cruisers fixed up and trying to make some money so I could, get bags, and I wouldn't have this cool story. And I wouldn't learn how to do business in the Mexican culture, which is really important. And I learned a ton of stuff, and it influenced all kinds of things. And I mean, our business has grown because God gave us that story. And so a lot of times I feel like God says, do you trust me that I know what I'm doing in your life? And I say, well, yeah, of course. Well, then why are you complaining? So I'm going to test you to see if you really do trust me, if you are living a life of faith in everything. So when bad things were happening, when my wife and I were both saying, Lord, thank you for this lesson that didn't happen, that it happened now instead of, when it's $1.5 million in debt. Because we made a stupid mistake later and didn't learn when we were, it was just, $150,000. And so anyway, it was a real blessing, and especially looking back, I'm so thankful that God did that to us, or allowed it to happen, allowed us to be stupid. We were ordering too much inventory. And so since I didn't know how to run a business, I was like, man, if I were to advertise in Condé Nast Traveler magazine or one of these magazines, oh man, I'd sell 1,000 bags. And I'd heard that I would. $10,000 for an ad. So I thought, oh man, I better get 1,000 bags. So I started ordering bags like crazy. And then without thinking, and Chuck Bowen told us you have to raise all different levels of your business at the same time. Not, you can't raise your production like really high and then raise your marketing really high and then raise your customer service really high and then raise your order fulfillment, shipping department really high. You got to raise it all at the same time, evenly. And that's a good way of doing business. But I didn't know that, so I just raised inventory really high, and the bags weren't showing up, and they were the bad quality, and I didn't have anyone to answer the phones but one sister, and my dad was getting real sick of shipping, and my other sister was shipping, but she couldn't do more than 15 bags a day. And so,
I love the picture of a family business, and everybody's getting tired of it now, and that's hysterical.
Yeah, I became a cuss word in my family. So and there's a whole bunch more to the story. I kind of skipped some parts. So we got some business coaching. We met Chuck Bowen, got in line. He had a radio show in town. We'd heard he's the guy to go to. So we went to his office finally and met with him and shared the story and told him what we had and how people, you know, go crazy for it and celebrities own them and all that sort of thing. And he got excited and he said, and God excited him about it. So he came on part-time helping us out, coaching us, and I did what he suggested. That's one of the things he said, that a lot of businesses fail because they don't do what they don't do the advice that they're given from, you know, coaches and people and people who know what they're talking about. So for some reason, God just put it in my mind to do what he said. So he gave me homework and I would do it. And he gave me more homework and I would just do it. And he said, now this is the guy I want to work with. So we started our own production in Mexico about a year later. We found this Dutch guy that managed this restaurant that I worked at, that I used to go to all the time, Suzette and I would go to. And we really liked him. So we hired him as our general manager, and Chuck's been training him how to do production. And we started, you know, producing our own things, and things started going a lot better and brought on more people and got him in the right places. And it's been going ever since. It's been going really strong we've been pretty much doubling every year. We started off quintupling, and then quadrupling, then tripling, then doubling, then almost doubling, then almost doubling, then almost doubling.
That's amazing that you have this unbelievable product, or products, I should say. They really are. They can't be compared or matched to anything else. But on the other hand, they're very expensive, and especially in the economy, the recession that we've seen here for a while, and yet people keep buying them because it's not simply a leather bag, and, you know, it's about story, and God is just in this thing for you. That it's just an amazing story, especially in light of today and everybody's fears and you know, thinking that, you know, maybe God exists, but he's not bigger than the economy. He's not bigger than anything else here. So it's just, your story is a great story.
And, you know, yeah, it's a really cool story that God's blessed us with. But I believe it was that he just kept testing to see if we would live a life of faith, that he knows what he's doing. But the story, yeah. And so when people, after they order the bag, I don't like when websites go on the front page, you know, plastered. Listen, we go green, so buy from us. We support breast cancer research, so buy from us. We are behind juvenile diabetes. We help with the research, so buy from us because we're good businesses. And that's just, they do it because their accountant said they should, and the marketing team said that they should because they, you know, it'll bring in sympathy or something. So I really try to keep away from that, and I put in their, when their tracking number, after they get ordered and the bag's been shipped, we say, here's your tracking number. Oh, and by the way, because you ordered, just want to say thank you because you helped an orphan get off the street or you helped drill a well somewhere in Africa. You did these, you know, thanks through the ministry that we support. I call them aid organizations instead of, you know, Christian ministries. I'd really try not to be churchy. But people go, man, I'm part, and then they tell that story. It's part of the story. Story is huge. People want to have a story. They want to be part of a story. story is just really a big deal.
Yeah. Okay. So now you've just touched into some of the things that you have expanded into doing. So as well as orphanages and that type of thing. Tell us a little bit more mm-hmm. about that, how this has just expanded now.
So we've been praying about where God wants us to give this money. And, you know, we had a good amount coming in. And there's a book called The Treasure Principle. It's really a short, cool book, really good, by Randy Alcorn. And he says God doesn't give you more money to raise your standard of living, but to raise your standard of giving. And not tooting our horn or anything, that's just the way it's supposed to be. That's what businesses are supposed to do, but so many people have lost focus, lost that you're God wants to bless, use you as a conduit to bless others. And so we were praying, and we ended up finding out about Africa New Life Ministries and what they're doing in Rwanda. And my heart's with youth, and my wife's heart is with, you know, single mothers and real down-and-outers. And so this ministry was they proclaim the gospel with two hands, they say. One is with the Word of God, and one is with through acts of compassion. So they had these women training, you know, learning how to do, you know, sew or cut hair, or they're learning these lifelong trades, and so they don't have to, you know, go to prostitution to feed their kids. And then the street kids who sleep in the dump, you know, in these cardboard nests, they kind of get together and lay cardboard all over the place and sleep there, and they eat the trash from the restaurants. Hopefully they can get to a restaurant, you know, load. And they scavenge through, and, you know, these little 4 and 5 year olds. And these kids will come down in Rwanda. They'll come down out of the dump on Mondays and Thursdays to eat. And I was thinking, man, what if that were my kid? What if they came home and I was dead? Suzette and I were dead, laying on the floor, all hacked up from a genocide in Rwanda, or my parents were killed, and now I'm an orphan living in the dump. What if my kids, you know, Cross and Sella, were walking around eating trash? Would I want someone to take care of my kids? And well, anyway, so we went over to Rwanda to see the ministry, and it ended up really, really impacting us, and so much so that we brought our whole company over, as many people as would go, last summer, and to experience what we experienced the summer before. And man, the people were saying, man, now I know what I want to do with my life. Chuck's wife, Lori, she said it. I think she's like 43 or 42. She said, you know, I haven't known I had no purpose in life until now. She said, in my whole life, now I know what I want to do with my life. Now, you know, and she's, so now, anyway, so now we're big on getting people to go to Rwanda. And it's a real safe place for a mission trip. And there's a lot of need there. It's a very clean place. It's high elevation, great weather. We stay in a nice home. They have a chef there in a real big 10-bedroom home. And we go through Africa New Life. They have everything arranged. It's really a cool deal. So anyway, it's morphed into that. And so we support that, which supports the orphans and the widows. And so it really hit our heart. And then someone suggested you give, and it's a balanced giving if you give in education, empathy, and evangelism. And so this has evangelism and empathy. And then they're starting a seminary called Rwanda Evangelical School of Theology, which is REST. And so we're given to that too. And so it's really fit our hearts, where God directed our hearts. And you know, of course, we give Mercy Shifts and Gospel for Asia and some other, and Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation and stuff. But African New Life is the main one. And now I'm on a mission to get people going over to Rwanda. It's such a simple trip, and it's completely life-changing for the people you go to, the orphans. One guy said we have a couple of boys that we adopted, and we didn't really adopt them. Like, technically, they're both like 19, but they're they seemed like boys, and one of them was at age two in the genocide in 1994. A million people died in about 90 days, and his parents were both, were two of them. And he came in, parents were dead. They grabbed him and hit him in the head real hard and threw him into a pit, thought they killed him. But some old lady, he said, remembers an old lady grabbed him out of the pit and hid him during the genocide. Anyway, he lived with her and with some soldiers until he was about four, and then he wandered the streets from four on, fighting and just had a rough life. He was pimping out other kids. He was dealing drugs. He got mixed with some drug dealers, and he was working for them. He had big, long dreadlocks, and everyone called him Rasta. And everyone was afraid of him. He'd been in jail and all the different jails and beaten by all the different cops and military. And they'd tried to kill him. They'd shot at him. I mean, they had him on a list to kill. He was a rotten kid. He started going to Africa New Life. And after about 3 years of not going into the meeting, he just went for the food. He went in. He said God drew him in. He gave his drugs up. He gave his knife up. And cut his hair off, gave his life to the Lord, and now he's a preacher. He said, I don't want to be called Rasta anymore. I want to be called Pasta, and not as in Italian pasta, but pastor. And he went out to this island with us. Where it went out to the Congo, around the edge of the Congo, this island out in the middle of this big, huge lake, and it's a rehabilitation vocational camp for older street boys. He went out there, shared his testimony. They all knew him, about 1,000 kids, about 1,100 kids out there. And they all knew Rasta. And they couldn't believe his change, the change in him, and the glow he had, and all that sort of thing. Well, they preached the gospel. He shared his testimony, and over 1,000 kids came forward to accept the Lord. And
Wow. They
said, if God can do that with Rasta, I want him to do that with me. And, I mean, the kid's powerful. But, you know, all this time he didn't have a sponsor to go to school. He'd only gone to fourth grade, and that's because he started in fourth grade. And he learned how to read by reading the Bible. And the guy reads like 2 to 3 hours a day, reads the Bible. And he wakes up at 3:30 in the morning to pray and read the Word before school. So now he's going into sixth grade next year. We've had him sponsor him for about a year and a half, and he just passed his final exams, or his exams to go to the next level. And anyway, so we're visiting with him and this other kid, Jean-Claude, who's got a horrible story too, but a great one of God's grace. And anyway, so we're there visiting with him. They live with a guy named Eric. He's 22, and he's just in the house. And we said, hey, Jean-Claude and Athanas, come out to dinner with us. Oh, Eric, you want to come with us? We just kind of thought, oh, we don't want to leave him alone and all. And Eric, you know, we'd hug on him and, hey, we really care about you. We've been praying for you, Eric. And we gave him some deodorant and, you know, we don't give him anything. You just care for him, love him. Anyway, our last day there, we were at a restaurant with a number of orphans who are they're all sponsored and they're all going to school now. And Eric told us, he said, you guys, we've been there for a couple weeks. And he said, you guys, since the day of my birth, I've never felt love like this. And he said, since I was 6 years old, I have not felt any love at all. Because that's when he was orphaned. And we hugged on him some and gave him some deodorant and took him places, but that's all. But he said, now I know that God loves me. And I know that he has something for me. I mean, that's from us just spending time with him and hugging on him and caring for him.
Right.
And so knowing that God can use us to change the whole direction of a life like that is by just physically being there and caring for someone. It's just like huge. So we are passionate about Africa. Getting people to, and not just Africa, but getting people to go on mission trips, getting out of their, they don't need a flat or flat screen. I mean, get them to go. So anyway, that's what we're passionate about.
Yeah. Well, okay, so here's what's amazing to me as I'm listening, trying to pull in the whole story. I'm realizing in the early days you were finding that this bag that you first had a vision of, you had this picture in your mind of the coolest bag in the world. All of a sudden, it's getting attention. People are wanting to buy it, and you're thinking, gosh, this could help fund the ministry I'm in, what I'm doing right now. And now, these bags are still funding the ministry that you love because this, from what I understand, Saddleback Leather is enabling you to do the traveling you're doing, the support you're doing, the taking people over to be exposed to this ministry. I mean, it is amazing what has come out of this desire, this picture you had of this bag, and because you've chased that, I mean, you just wanted a bag, that it's turned into this now. It's just an amazing story.
It's been a lot of fun. It's been really cool that God has used us in this way. He'll use anyone. People who are open to it and who are obedient to what he puts on their hearts. And I haven't always been obedient, but when I have, then he is more than willing to put people in my life to help things along. And he just, I mean, he loves to do it. And so, you know, one of the things too, I had a good thought. What was that? Something you said was brought on something. I can't think of it. It's gone. Oh, that was a good one. Oh, shoot.
It was the best one, right? It was the best one. You know what? You sound a lot like me right now. Okay, so let me ask you, this is a little bit of a detour for a second, but I was really struck by a story that you told. Actually, I think as we were sitting down for dinner at that Free Agent Academy event, and there was a number of us. You were talking to a number of us, and you told a story about being a waiter, and the fact that you would make more tips in a night and yet serve less customers than other people, and there were just some things that you just kind of instinctively knew to do. And what struck me, and if you're not remembering what it is, I'll tell more of the story in a second. But what struck me is discernment, the way you saw how people operated, kind of motives, what would help somebody make a decision. I was just struck that you were at a very human level with people. You just kind of knew how to move the heart in a degree, even to the level of working in a restaurant as a waiter. Does this story sound familiar, or should I say a little more so you can pick up on it? say a little more, right?
Others would. I remember as a waiter, some guys were, they're just robots. They're just machines, waiting machines. They would come on in, hello, welcome to the Old Spaghetti Factory. Hey, our specials are this, that, and here are the menus. And if you have any more questions, I'll be back in a couple minutes to take your orders. Man, they just knock the tables out. The table would be there for 45 minutes. Their bill would be there just in time. They'd come back with a credit card, grab it, bring it back. Y'all have a good night. Yeah, take care. And I was there, so I wouldn't get as many tables, but they had a lot of tables, and they get the 15%, 15%, 15%, 15% off of tables. And they got way more tables than I did because I took my time and hung out with everyone, and I wasn't doing tricks and trying to get people to give me tips or anything, but I was just being real with them and just talking and hanging out. And my name's Dave. If you need anything else, let me know. And so I got more tips. We ended up with the same amount of tips, but I didn't have to work as much. It was great. I got a higher percentage with fewer tables. They got lower percentage with more tables. And no one was mad at them. No one was mad at me.
Right.
Worked out pretty good.
And so I was just struck when I was hearing you tell that story about you were just relational, friendly, low key, not pressure with people, and therefore people responded, right? They felt your friendship. The other thing that hit me about your story was the idea of how you would approach people at the end when it came to dessert, and especially if there were women at the table. And
yeah.
Okay, so you know where I'm going with that story?
Yeah, I think so. With women, you know, I tell waiters all this all the time when I'm going, you know, when I'm at a restaurant, they go, oh, would y'all like any dessert? And I go, okay, would you like a suggestion for that? Would the two of you like to split a dessert? We have this, you know, this cheesecake chocolatey thing that's really good. And then my wife's going, or women, so if you did it with women, would you, two of you like to split a dessert? I can bring a couple of spoons and y'all can go at it. It's really good. And then, of course, one woman's going, if I order a whole cheesecake, she's going to think that I'm a pig. And the other one's going, well, she probably wants some. And if I get some, well, she would probably get some. And they go, they go like that. And so why don't you just offer it to both of them to split it? And then usually they order the whole thing, or they'll split it and they get a coffee too. Or anyway, is that it?
Yeah, what I was so struck by when you were telling that story was, again, understanding the stories that we live in, right? That the woman's going to say, gosh, I am, even though I'd love to, I'm not going to order a whole dessert to myself. And you know that to be true, so rather than pushing that, you kind of know the story that kind of exists at the table, and to be able to say, would you two like to split something? And then there's permission given, right? Everybody's just, they've kind of let down the pressure off of appearances. And I was just struck, Dave, when you told that story about your intuition into kind of the heart and how people think and what goes on. And even when you went on and said, hey, what I want to do with these orphans in Rwanda is I want to flood Facebook and YouTube with all these pictures of these kids, and not the kids who are, you know, emaciated, flies on their face, and you're saying, you know, you have to save this kid, but let them just talk and smile and talk about what's going on and because of this sponsorship. And I just thought, man, this man understands the heart. He understands the story that we're living in, and therefore he can speak into it. I was just very impressed by that. And therefore you also do this with your products, with your bags, because they tell stories.
Yeah, the stories. You can't have enough story, that's for sure. One of the things that I found too, by going and getting involved in the ministry, step number one for God to really use us in I remember praying, God, use me in great ways, Lord. I mean, if you want, if you choose to use me, I'm willing for you to use me. And I don't need a big house and all that. I'll be used any way that you want, Lord. I remember genuinely praying, God, if you want to use me, then use me. And I was thinking, kind of out of my pride, I was thinking, I imagine myself standing in front of 500 youth, you know, talking, and they're crying and coming up forward and rededicating their lives and all that. And I was thinking, oh yeah, that's the way God's going to use me, and using whatever thing. And then, but really I'm not that great of a speaker. So couldn't find out, but I have a fun story. But he said, okay, then you have to get out of your comfort zone and I'm going to stretch you. So what I found by going to Rwanda, which is, took me out of my comfort zone, took my wife and our one-year-old and three-year-old, I saw, like, for instance, the church sign. I enjoy marketing and sales and stuff like that, and kind of just naturally have a bent toward that. And everyone has a bent, they're bent towards something. And someone is really good at something. Everyone is really good at something. It's just you have to find out what you're really good at, and then work in that, and then surround yourself with people who are better at all the other stuff. And well, anyway, so I get there, and the church, the ministry sign is this huge sign that says African New Life Dream Center. And it's on a curvy road and going downhill and up this big hill, and tons of foot traffic, tons of people on the road. And so people driving by don't see that it's really a church is the main thing there, you know, New Life Bible Church. And so I said, hey, you guys, if you were to have this and that on your sign, and so if they only have it 1 second to glance at it, they know there's a church there, then they're going to be coming to church when they, you know,
eventually it's going to catch that there's a church there and they're going to go, but you can't tell there's a church there. So what if you did this with your sign and that, and they're saying, what should we do with our Facebook strategy? And I said, well, what if you did videos of all the sponsored kids and having them say thank you to their sponsor, and here's what's going on with me, just a 20-second, 30-second video. No intro, just a clip. And then the sponsor posts that link, that video, up on their Facebook page. And all their friends are like, oh, dang, that is cool. And they're crying, and how cool is that? I want a sponsor. And so you get, instead of spending all this money on sponsorship, why don't you do this kind of strategy or that kind of strategy? What if everyone who came to on a mission trip, they interviewed three kids, and then they said, this kid needs a sponsor. His name is da-da-da-da. And he could really use a sponsor. And then when they get back, you send them the links to YouTube, and you know, ask them to post those three links. Those kids will get sponsored in a heartbeat, and you know, all that sort of thing. And so I'm using my marketing ideas, just my marketing brain, to help the ministry. And maybe God will use some of these ideas to get more kids saved than I could ever give money toward, or could ever be around a campfire strumming a guitar with, or, you know, any of that stuff. So what if an artist goes, but see, you don't know this till you go and get out of your comfort zone and go and serve. So what if you go to this boys and girls club and you're kind of like a mentor, and you find out that their website's kind of a small organization in your town, and their website really stinks, and you go, well, I know search engine optimization stuff to get more traffic to your site. Maybe I could help. Or I'm an artist, and your website pretty much sucks. Can I say that on the air?
Yeah,
anyway.
You could say worse than
okay.
that if you like, yeah.
Okay. Darn. Okay, is that right? Anyway, so.
Okay, that just crossed the line.
Bleep. Okay. You said, well, I can draw, and if you'd like, I could draw some pictures, and you could put them on your website. Or let's say you know... I don't know, you have a good idea for fundraising, and so you might share that, or whatever you're good at, man, you're going to find a place to use that to do more for the kingdom than you ever could imagine doing otherwise. But in order to find out a way to use your gifts, for God to use your gifts, you have to get out of your comfort zone and go start serving somewhere and look for a way to work in your sweet spot. Find out what you're good at, what you enjoy. Do a strength finder test. Make a DISC profile. Talk to some friends. Ask what you're good at. And what do I avoid? What am I bad at? And they'll tell you, especially your siblings. And start volunteering and working in ministries and services once a week, once every couple weeks, even if you have to. And you'll be surprised at how God will use you if you're willing for him to use you.
Right. So in other words, what I'm hearing is gain some clarity on who you are and what you have to offer to the world, and then start offering it, and things will become clearer as you do, and God will start pointing you in the specific direction he wants you to go. Is that fair to say it that way, summarizing what you said?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
I would say,
okay,
God doesn't direct a boat until it's a ship until it's moving. So go move.
Yeah, that's really good.
Go have a bag
okay,
made. Go have a bag made. Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so one last question, and then I'll turn the recorder off, just open the lines for a few moments. And that is this: how would you describe the particular effect of your life that God has given you that he wants you to bring to the world? That's how I define our calling. Our calling is to bring the particular effect that God has created us to have, this particular brilliance or strength or splendor or abundance that we have. We bring it to the world that we are connected to. And so what would you say, what is the effect of Dave Munson's life that he uniquely brings to this world?
I would say, can you kind of rephrase that?
That's a fair question. So what is God using me?
What am I good at? What is God using me to do for Him?
Yep. You can definitely say it that way. That works as well. Yes.
I would say that. I just want to answer you right. I would say that God is using. He's using me to in my area of like persuasion. The DISC profile said I was a persuader, sales sort of thing, to sell people on getting involved in the lives of others and letting God use them to love people. And right now that seems to be in the form of making people aware of Rwanda and getting people on a mission trip somewhere, but Rwanda is a good place. Maybe more facilitating the people stepping out of their comfort zones, taking a risk. So God is using me to promote taking risk in your life,
okay.
Which isn't really that much risk at all.
Yeah. Okay. So, and one more question. So, with Saddleback, it seems like your role has always been that you are the designer of the bags, right? You're the one that can see the bag, or like the case for the iPad, or I mean, you have so many products out there. You're the designer in the company, right? Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. See, I think that is your genius. I think that is the brilliance you have, because all the stories I've heard from the bag to, you know, you just know how to, you could say, market or promote. That's an issue of seeing design. And even this, even persuading is an issue of seeing design, right? What are the words that are needed right here to make that work? And I just think, you know, design is a big part of the effect of your life, and it plays out in many other ways than just the design of a bag. But I just think where you bring that, it seems like, Dave, this element of design, whether it's to the company or to the place in Rwanda or whatever, it seems like God just touches that, and all of a sudden it expands, multiplies, grows. I think it's pretty remarkable.
Well, you know, the strange thing about that is I know technically I'm a designer. Like, I've never been trained. I got my degree in theology. But I have a lot of ideas, and I don't necessarily think of new things, but I just make things better. And I go, man, these guys are horrible. These bags are terrible. I want a bag that people fight over when I'm dead. I mean, I want it to be ripped out of my cold, hard hands. You know, I want it to, you know. So I'm going to make it. You know, and I think about how can we make it better. So I just think of how to make things better, and then. And I've had to be creative because we don't use zippers. I dog so much on zippers because they break. It's like having a submarine with a cardboard hatch. You know, it just, just ends up being a big aquarium at the bottom of the sea. And so zippers are going to break. So because I've said no zippers, I've had to be creative in the way that I make things. And it's if I still had zippers, I would look just like every other bag. So it's kind of forced me to. So I don't. I mean, I've been forced to be a designer, but I don't really see myself as a designer that much.
Well, that's the fascinating thing. You said just you just make something better, and actually, as you say that, that's what I've seen throughout this conversation is something that exists and making it better. Whether it was you saw another bag and you said, but this would be the coolest bag in the world, to what's currently happening at this orphanage in Rwanda, and you saw a way to make it better. So that's amazing.
It's making things better. Yeah, that's it. It's making things better.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Dave, thank you. This has been really fun talking to you, hearing your story, and really, actually, what's been great about this more than your story, it's been what's come through your voice, which guys in the chat line are picking up this joy, this excitement, this realness about you. So thank you for doing this conversation with us.
Oh, yeah, it was fun. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah. Okay, I have now hit stop on the recorder, And what can you give us like 10 more minutes at the most, and I'll time it so we won't go over 10.
I can give you another hour if you want.
Okay. Well, let me go over. Yeah, we won't do that because I have to get upstairs there in a minute. So let me go over and take us off. So, guys, I'm going to take us off, everyone off mute in just 1 second, and then any question you want to ask or comment, you were able to do that, and we'll do that for about 10 minutes. So everybody now is on the line. Is there any question you want to ask Dave or comment you want to make?
Hey, Dave, I'll jump in.